helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Now, the Home and Garden Show with Wally Conway and Larry O'Neill on News 104.5 WOKV.
Good morning. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show. It is 6:06 on a beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville, Florida, the intergalactic headquarters of the Home and Garden Show. I want to thank you for being with us. Thank you for joining us. And let me give you some insight on what we do here at the Home and Garden Show. Each and every single Saturday from 6 until 8 a.m., I am joined by the big guy, Sasquatch,
the
Yeti. 6 foot six, 232 pounds of twisted steel and sex appeal, Mr. Larry O'Neill. Larry's job here on the show is to be sure your grass is green, your fruit is sweet, and your flowers forever in bloom. Me, Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections, my job is to be sure your home is safe, secure, efficient, and forever a source of pleasure and pride. From time to time, I get a house idea, Larry gets a garden idea, we mix it up in the middle. But what makes the show fun for us is you. Your thoughts, your calls, your commentary. Here is that phone number if you'd like to join us. Write this down. 855-765-1045. Sasquatch, large man.
Yes.
Stayed cool all week.
Oh, yeah. It's very cool.
It was beautiful. It's attic season.
Yes.
It's attic season. We can crawl comfortably through the attic.
You can get a pillow and go up there and sleep up there.
Without
perspiration
or fear of death or destruction.
Right.
No need to bundle up. It's not cold. It's just attic season.
Yeah. It's a good time to get up there and inspect your attic.
All the good things that occur happen in the attic or in the crawl space if you're fortunate enough to have one.
And then you can caulk all those seams that you've been meaning to do, around your light fixtures, make sure it's more airtight.
That is the goal.
So you're not
the prevention.
Sucking or exhausting into the attic.
Prevention of air infiltration from undesirable spaces. In the majority of people's houses, the air that they breathe each and every day is nasty. Yeah. And the reason for that is this. We've done a great job with windows that don't leak and doors that don't leak. The walls don't leak. Mm-hmm. So the things that are left to leak are the attic plane and crawl space plane if you have one. So most of the air you breathe is full of lizard yak, bird droppings, squirrel dung, and similar
things. I don't have to worry about that. Those sash windows in my house leak like sieves.
That is a positive in terms of fresh air.
You know what I mean?
The other thing that's very, very common in so many of our homes is the air handler sits out in the attic or in the crawl space.
Okay.
Oh, for those that are in the attic, that's the nastiest thing imaginable. So imagine this. You spend all this money for a device called an air conditioner to condition the air. That is, make it clean and change its temperature and its humidity. And then you take that device and you stick it up in the attic.
Yeah.
It's the hottest imaginable place in summer. The air up there is filthy,
dirty.
The bugs and dirt. And typically, having looked at thousands of air handlers, the ones in the attic are never maintained.
Do they wear out faster in the attic?
They wear out faster, yes, for several reasons. Good question. One is, because that air handler is in such a hot space,
it's continually hot.
It's considerably less efficient. So it runs more and more and more and more. So you're wearing it out as opposed to... The heat is not destructive to it.
We need to get a new commercial where we could, promote putting your air handler in the shade on the north side.
Well, not the air handler. The air handler is the inside.
I mean, not the air handler,
compressor
but
the
compressor
in the shade on the outside.
Yeah. Okay.
Makes a difference in performance.
Yeah.
So it's not the sun that's killing the compressor.
Right.
It's the fact it's operating in a hot environment.
And so it's running continuously.
So if you have your compressor sitting in the bright, bright, bright sunshine and your air handler up in the attic, it probably, I'm going to guess
you lose. Life.
Yeah, you probably
50%?
Lose, maybe not, 20-30% on efficiency and maybe 10 or 20% on its life, I would reason.
Wow.
There's
That's
no real accurate data
on
we've
that. Looked at air conditioning units outside that have been, 40 years old. You said you looked at a Singer.
Yep, an old Singer that was more than 40.
Yeah.
But that's relatively rare. You want to get everything you can on your side as it relates to home maintenance and affordability.
Right.
That's why, in my home, my office, our rental properties, I have every single one of them on a biannual maintenance plan with a Snyder Man.
Yes.
They just come on out and they do it. And here's the thing. It's just like changing your oil.
Mm-hmm.
If you, or it's many things in your health, if you care to them before there's a symptom of pain or failure, things last longer and they stay cheaper.
Right.
So my air handler gets cleaned every 6 months, and it's clean when the guy comes and cleans it. Right. It's not yet dirty.
Right.
Yet they go through the process, you know, they blow it dry, they spray a little jazz on it, clean it all up, make sure the drain line's clear. So it's always serviced prior to needing it.
Very cost effective.
Very. It's like your oil, right?
Yeah.
You don't wait to change your oil until your engine seizes up. You know? But you put it on a regular schedule at 5,000 miles.
A little late then.
Yeah, so you're on a 5,000-mile schedule for your the changing of your oil. You can read something on the oil can that might say you can go 10.
Yeah.
Well, you probably can. But if you go 5, you'll go longer. You'll do right. it before exactly. you need it. What's exciting in
your
world?
Do you know what a logged in is?
A logged in?
Yeah.
Like in a computer, I logged in.
Logged in. Logged in is where the word lawn came from.
No.
Oh, no, that's the English word. Old English word lawn. It means an opening in a clearing, you know, a clearing in the woods, you know. Hmm. Lawns are an interesting thing, you know, because they become kind of the iconic culture. So I did a little, you know, reading about lawns, you know, that seems like, you know, an interesting topic to me. But, you know, that, you know, another fact about lawns is that lawns, because we're getting out there with our lawnmower and getting them started, is that it's in Massachusetts, 20% of the area is covered by lawns.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can't believe that.
Yes.
No.
It's a scientific fact. 20% of the area in Massachusetts is covered by lawns. Satellite. Then lawns is the number one most irrigated crop, three times larger than corn.
It's probably the greatest single waste of water, consumer of water.
Well, you know, you're going to be watering something. You know what I mean? I mean, you figure, you know, people say they want to get rid of their lawns, but what are you going to put in there in place?
Pine straw.
Can you imagine driving down the neighborhood and just look like wild woods like your place?
Yeah.
Every neighborhood would be like that.
That'd be
interesting. Yeah, it would be nice.
It'd look like Yellowstone.
You know, but normally when lawns, you know, where lawns were developed, is that lawns were killing fields around castles.
And so you can get a clear shot.
You can get a clear shot, right, exactly, because the front yard was always reserved for, guess what, vegetable garden. You know, you want to walk out your door, get yourself some vegetables, and then they became popular. And it's just like, you know, this one guy, Edward Budding, like that name, but he developed a lawnmower. Once he developed a lawnmower, then it was all over.
Well, take me back there. On the development of the lawnmower, yeah. That predates the internal combustion engine. He mowed
there was actually
some mechanical device?
Yeah, the lawnmower. They used to use sheep to mow.
Yeah.
And then sheep and then a guy with a sickle. You know, they get it. Because it was a very expensive process.
Yeah.
And you know, only the rich could afford it. Like, you know, the kings and the knights and all the other stuff. But when Edward Budding came along.
I want to know more about this lawnmower.
Yeah, he was a textile guy. He was an engineer, and he worked at a textile plant. He was
a
freelance. What powered it? Manpower.
So it was a rotary mower?
Yeah, rotary mower. Okay. A real mower. And then, they put a Briggs & Stratton steam-powered motor.
How big was this thing?
You know, it was a pretty good size. He had a real mower originally. You know, it was just small and it dumped the clippings in the front.
Right.
But then they had a steam-powered Briggs & Stratton, I think, was the next evolutionary step. So it's at $29 billion a year are spent on lawn care. The average person spends 150 hours. Because you don't spend any time.
I spend zero.
Zero. So someone's spending 300 hours a year on his lawn. So it's 150 hours a year on their lawn.
Okay. So let me ask you. You said what is the average lawn cost what per year to maintain?
I didn't look that one. They didn't have that fact.
$29 billion
a year is spent.
$29 billion. We have 300 million people. That's about $1,000 a piece.
Yeah.
Roughly.
Yeah.
$1,000. That's per capita, not per lawn.
Well, you figure some people are living in apartments.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You know what I mean?
So let's guess a third of the people living in lawns. It's probably about, as you do all the math on that, it's several, $2,000-$3,000 a year.
Yeah. Your lawn is the most, you know, it's the cheapest thing to install, but it needs more maintenance.
So $3,000 a year to maintain a lawn, that's what I pay for my boat slip.
Right.
150 hours maintaining it per year.
Right.
That is a three-hour boat ride every single week.
Right.
So rather than have a lawn,
yes,
I have a boat.
A boat. And so you have an oarsman.
Not having a long.
Your wife is the oarsman, right?
They's not oars. They's me sisters.
Okay.
Rather than have a long, rather than have a pay the money for a lawn,
yeah.
I'm paying for my boat. Rather than spend the time doing my lawn, because I don't have right. one, I'll spend the time on my boat.
Right.
Now, if we ask those same 300 million Americans, would you rather have a lawn that you toiled in every weekend, or would you rather have a boat that you sailed in every weekend?
That'd be a question to put to them.
Yeah.
But there's other issues in taking care of a boat. You know that, maintenance.
Uh-huh.
You know, those boats can cost a lot of money on maintenance. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They just don't sit there in the water maintenance-free. But anyway, so lawn is a very important thing. So when you're doing your lawn, you know, when you're thinking about working on your lawn or doing it, in fact, there's an amazing amount of accidents with lawnmowers. 84,000 a year with lawnmowers.
Another reason not to have a lawn. It keeps getting better.
Well, you can drown
it. Your boat can hours sink. A year.
You know, you're not the best navigator either. You could get
point
lost.
In fact, I am.
Yeah, you're good at yeah, right. I wouldn't trust you navigating down a creek. You know,
hey,
I
mean, the United States Navy.
Can you navigate by stars?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I went to Naval Academy, man.
Yeah, yeah, but
I was an officer
that don't mean
of the deck
anything.
At 23 years old on an aircraft carrier.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's
while,
right.
Well, you were
that
down
was
there
then,
mess cooking.
That was then, and this is now. This
you
is
were
now.
A mess cook.
Yeah.
That's hysterical. Get back to the garden
yeah.
stuff.
Okay, so, you know, the lawn is around $29 billion a year is an amazing amount of money they spend on. So you want to make sure that you maintain it as best as possible. The, you know, some of the key things you could do, you know, when you're, is check your irrigation this time of the year.
Oh, yeah.
Check your irrigation. You know, a lot of times the lawnmower people come by and mow the lawn and they clip the heads. And that's a frequent problem.
Oh, yeah.
And your irrigation system's running at night. So you don't really understand what's
going
on.
Got those geysers out there wasting water and
yeah.
not distributing
and
it.
And not even not working, not working. Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. So check your irrigation system since, you know, it's getting started up. And if you want to make your lawn maintenance, you know, better and more environmentally friendly, you know, you want to use more organic fertilizer. It does require a little bit more frequency. You can use, like, Mill Organite, Green Edge. You can get that at Home Depot. It really does work, you know. And then you can use fish emulsion. So you can use alfalfa pellets. All these things take frequent applications. Some of the things you have to set aside maybe is to not maybe some weed control. You may have to use a little bit of a chemical for weed control because there's just so much you can do.
Right.
With dollar weed is an invasive.
The healthier the lawn, the fewer weeds.
Exactly. The healthier lawn, the fewer weeds. Then the low areas that are sodden, you know, that are always wet and hard to keep the grass alive, you want to consider, you know, maybe turn the irrigation off there. You know, just try something different because a lot of times areas that are between the houses that are in the drain swale where they have a lot of torpedo grass or sedges are growing, that's an indication that it's a really unhealthy environment for St. Augustine or Zoysia. You know, the other thing you want to do is to examine your lawnmower blade because we're really starting to get mowed. Tearing the lawn.
Very bad.
Very bad. So you want to make sure that you're in the right height on your lawnmower. So a lot of times I'm looking at lawns, they're mowed an inch and a half. 4 inches is your height.
That's nice and plush.
Yes.
I like that. Good thought. It's 6:20 here at News 104.5 on a Home and Garden Show. Very brief break. Jumping right on the phones to your calls. We would truly love to hear from you. At 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show, 625. Here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Beautiful day. Sharing it with you. If you'd like to check in with us, we'd love to hear from you with your comment, your question, or just any thought that happens to be on your mind. That phone number is this phone number, 855-765-1045. Also like to do a shout out to those people visiting from out of town for March Madness. We're really happy and proud to be supporting the tournament here. So we're grateful that you're here. Now I'm guessing
yeah.
also the people who are out all night watching basketball all day and all night, they may still be asleep. Though, so be nice to them when they wake up. They could be cranky depending whether they picked winners or losers. Quick reminder for you, should you need a large landscaper anytime, during the week. Easy to find all the time online, larrysgarden.com. Got the blog, video, frequently asked questions. More than 2,000 people interacting there, telling all sorts of plant stories. It's just fascinating.
Yeah, fascinating.
Also has a telephone if you would like to use that. That phone number is this number, 346-1970. If you're outside of the immediate Jacksonville area, you'll need the area code, 904-346-1970. Probably 700 people in the greater Jacksonville area, the Northeast Florida region, will purchase homes. Right contracts for homes this particular weekend. You're going to need a home inspection. The right best place for you to go is Home Pro Inspections. Easy to find all the time online. Go homepro.com. They can take care of everything right there. The 18-month warranty, the home inspection. If you need water testing, any other environmental things, everything you need for due diligence, go homepro.com. And the telephone number is 268-8211, and for our friends in Palm Coast and Brunswick, Georgia, and all points in between, 904-268-8211.
Never buy a home without a home inspection.
Well, people still do.
$300, $400, $500.
I'll tell you the funniest
million
thing.
Dollars invested. You know, why would you buy? I mean, someone without even, hey, the windows work at least. You know what I mean?
The most common reasons, they're not great ones, that people don't do a home inspection is they say it's a brand new home. Well, that needs it.
Oh, and brand new homes need plenty of home inspection.
And my favorite of the wrong answers for not doing a home inspection at the time of purchase is, oh, it was a short sale, it was a foreclosure, I got a really great deal.
Right.
That's preposterous. Because here's what happens, and it's a sad thing. When a home is a short sale foreclosure, that is a financial tragedy for the family who lived in the home prior to that. And always, virtually always, there's been deferred maintenance, and sometimes, regrettably, there's even hostile acts of sabotage that occur on the way out.
Right.
So we've found all kinds of things. We have people clip wires behind receptacles, doing different, you know, unpleasant things inside the home.
Well, at least you want to know if you're up for a $30,000 bill, you know, you want to know what you're
Well,
what
the
you're
idea
up against,
is to minimize surprise. That's
right,
the
minimize
whole
surprise.
Goal. And so you say, this is what I'm up against. It's not to say you're not still buying the home.
Right.
But rather, you know, you're making a plan when you purchase a home. You're going to do a little bit of paint here, upgrade there. You have a thought in your mind. And what happens is when people don't do the proper due diligence, they execute their plan. And in the process of executing their plan, they discover things they didn't previously know. And it messes up the budgeting and all that other
jazz.
Friends
don't let friends buy homes without home inspections.
Correct. They also don't let them have lawns, but that's another issue. It's 6:30 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. We've got Fox News traffic, weather, and more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 855-765-1045. Love to hear from you. Stay with us. It's 6:36 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Happy to have you back. Love to hear your sweet voice in my headphones. To check in with us, that number is 855-765-1045. Had the opportunity to do an investigation in a four-story condominium this week.
Four-story condominium.
And it reminds
me of... Did it have an elevator?
No, I walked.
Oh, okay. That was a lot of work for you.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Reminds me of a song, I believe it was a Paul Simon song that said,
okay,
one man's...
tune it up. Go ahead.
You got a question?
Yeah, I'm going to listen to you sing.
One man's ceiling... is another man's floor. So
one
the particular
ceiling,
one man's ceiling is another man's floor. Anytime we're stacked up like that.
Okay.
So what ended, here is the scenario.
Mm-hmm.
The person was on the third floor, and they believed and perceived that they were affected by mold, impacted by mold. Mm-hmm. And the homeowners association sent someone in, and they opened up this particular wall that showed a sign of stain. They then left it open for some number of months, while there was mold and funk and all that stuff in it. And
they all died?
No.
Okay.
She was concerned and complained a little bit, which she should have, rightfully so. And they finally came back and they sealed it back up. But her symptoms did not go away. So she had us come out and we did some infrared to see if it was still wet. We also took air samples to see what was going on there. But here's the long and the short of it.
Yep.
When it doesn't matter whether it's an apartment dweller or a condo owner, the units, the homes above you and below you impact what goes on in yours.
Yes.
And there was not a collaborative, cooperative approach to solving it.
Mm-hmm.
So the people assigned by the homeowners association or the management company viewed that unit in isolation rather than what's going on above it, what's going on below it. So they were never able to solve the problem because they refused to look at it holistically, basically from a position.
Well, did you take an air test with a mold test?
Yeah.
Was there mold in the air?
Yeah, there was. Okay. And that got it to a level of attention that they're now engaged to solve it.
Okay.
So my encouragement for people in the, you know, in maintenance of these types of places, whether you're a decision maker at a management company or the people executing it, whenever there's a home that's having a challenge, you got to consider what's happening above it, below it, to the left of it, to the right of it. They impact each other so you can find what's causal. They could have futzed around in this apartment or this particular condo for the next 55 years because the source of the problem was from above. They never bothered to do that, rather just lived in denial. And then, and this is really more for the people who find themselves frustrated by non-responsiveness, after we did the diagnostics that was funded by that condo owner, not the association, and came back and the air testing affirmed there were very, very high levels of mold in the living space, affirmed there was mold encapsulated also in the walls from the area they allegedly repaired.
But the kind of mold that is harmful, or is it?
Well, that's an interesting question.
Because mold is around us all the time.
Correct.
You know, but it depends on what's the parts per million is important.
And that the concentration is also an issue.
Right.
So, and it's not measured in parts per million, but that's okay.
Okay, well tell me how many. Well, how's it measured? How's it measured?
It's in spores per cubic meter.
Okay, but spores per cubic meter.
It's okay. So, where was I? Good gracious.
Ahead.
So, what ended up happening is I know what you said. You asked, is it good mold or bad mold?
Concentration. Come on, get the mind in red gear.
Yeah, interact. So, there's 10,000 different species of mold that naturally occur in the environment. There are five that are known to be toxic to humans.
Okay.
Most are very rare. The one that isn't overly rare is Stachybotrys, which is associated with high levels of wet. But the more important thing is your body responds different than my body. My body responds different.
Each person has a different level of immunity.
And the best example, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Different term, but that's okay.
Okay.
So anyway, a great example is the mold known as penicillium.
Right.
Which makes penicillin. It's where it's derived from. So for some people, penicillin is a life-saving drug.
Yes.
For others, it will kill them.
Right.
So that's why it's so
difficult.
There you go. So that's why it's so difficult to say, is that the good one or the bad
one?
Right. So how the determination is made is the outside sample is fresh air. So it's what molds are natural at that given day and in what concentrations. And then you compare that to the inside. So the inside sample should have no species that's not natural to the outside.
Right.
And the concentration of natural species should not be significantly elevated.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that simple. So when this person brought us in to do the diagnostic and to sample the air, it affirmed there was a problem, and it actually is what caused them then to do
so
the
rest.
So
what are the
things.
Symptoms? If, let's say, people are suspicious of having mold issue, you know, in their what are their symptoms normally?
Well, usually it begins as a moisture problem. So they see a stain or something leaked or something got out of control. Mm-hmm. The individual physical symptoms, the simplest of things is smell.
Right.
So you can smell something very often. It's not yet causing you a physical problem. After smell, the next symptom we hear people complain about as we ratchet up the intensity is some impact on their eyes.
Eyes
may be burning or itchy. Sneezing, coughing, and then it goes downhill from there.
Okay.
But if you smell something, there's something going on.
Right.
And it's kind of funny.
That kind of musty smell.
Very often that's what people will describe. Mm. Each mold, but molds vary in their particular scent.
Odor.
You can't identify them by the smell. And some, you may smell one thing and I don't smell it.
Mm.
So what I'll typically do when we're doing that type of investigation is we'll take the most sensitive sniffer in the house. Usually it's a lady, and we just walk and talk through. What do you smell now? What do you smell here? And the eye, you use them almost
kind
like
of
a
figure
tool.
Out where it is. At.
Yeah, you use them as a tool to try to help narrow it down, because you know we use infrared cameras. We're doing biologic sampling. We're doing all those different things. But ultimately, the reason the person called is because of what they were detecting.
Right.
So we use them to help us isolate and investigate. You know, which area, which height, which rooms, which places. And we start putzing around, turn the heating off, turn it on, doing everything we can to attempt to isolate what the source is, rather than taking 50 samples in a house, which gets very, very expensive.
Yeah.
So we're trying to find the sweet spot, which is the sour spot, to take the sample for the investigation. So
hey,
that's how that plays out.
Well, if you got mold, if you're suspicious, they can call you and you can do
Yeah, we can take care of that.
Take care of it, no problem. But, you know, talking about mold, you know, those old white azaleas that get kind of, you know, when they're dropping their leaves, get a little old. But that's a signal to you they're dropping their flowers. Right about now, they're not looking as good because they're getting a little old, saggy. And but this is the critical time, the only time that you can effectively change the overall appearance of them for next year.
In terms of shape?
Shape and the amount of flowers. So
really? Okay.
When they're preparing to drop their last flower, this is the time to prune. So pruning them is very important. What you do when you pruning them, they're making more breaks. That means they're producing more lateral branches underneath that point that you pruned. And they're going to have more terminal ends, and the more terminal ends, the greater amount of flowers.
Got it.
So pruning stimulates those lateral ends to grow more terminal ends, more flowers. So this is the only time of the year, because azaleas produce flowers on their old wood. They produce an embryonic flower. It sits there for the year, and then it blooms the following
year. Would that look like a bud, an embryonic flower? What does it look like?
It's almost invisible. It's invisible to the eye. You can't really see it. It's there, but you can see it if you want to get a magnifying glass and look for it. But this is the time that you affect the overall flower power. And when you're pruning back, flower power. You know, when you're pruning back, you want to make sure that you apply some fertilizer and water for maybe 4 or 5 days if you can. 2 days, you know, just put some water, do something. You know, I know it's a little bit laborious at times and you're busy, but put some water on it. You know, make sure the fertilizer gets into the system. We were fertilizing a place and put the fertilizer, came back and looked at it, and no results. They weren't watering after fertilizer.
Granular fertilizer.
Granular, yeah. Right. So this is going to make a big difference, you know, in your overall, the southern indicas, which are, you know, they bloom on old wood. There's a lot of azaleas we have on bloom on old wood. Now, the remotion type, like autumn azaleas are great remotion or reblooming type, and they can be pruned continuously through the year and will rebloom. If you're out shopping for azaleas, you're kind of down on azaleas because they don't bloom much and they don't perform well.
Can you impact the color of azalea? Is that the plant?
No, hydrangea. Hydrangeas. One of the best azaleas that we've ever planted, and it blooms pretty much, you know, repeat blooms all year round, is autumn carnation. That's an encore azalea, and it has good foliage, and it has a nice pink bloom, and will bloom not continuously, but repeat blooms all year on. So, you know, if you're out shopping and you want to get one that's around 3 to 4 feet, put that one on the list, because that's very disease resistant too.
Excellent. Take me back to the hydrangea and how it changes in color. I can go from what to color?
Oh, yeah, hydrangeas.
How do you stimulate that?
Hydrangeas are always a popular flower, and if you put aluminum sulfate on them, it's going to turn them blue.
That's the aluminum chemical in deodorant, yeah?
Yeah, I think it is.
Aluminum sulfate, aluminum chlorhydrate.
You want to make sure that chemical is out of the reach of children, because it does taste a little sweet. So, you know, you want to make it sure it's up out of the way.
It goes from what color to what color with the aluminum sulfate?
From pink to blue. Huh. And you can almost see it do it. I mean, you put a couple tablespoons on there, water it in. The next day, it's, you know, it starts changing color.
What does that do to the health of the plant? Are you basically
poisoning it? Nothing. I mean, you can't poison it. Anything that's too
will
much.
Will it retain that color? Is that a permanent change?
It will pretty much retain the color. You know,
in that individual flower, how about when it reblooms?
Yeah, when it reblooms, it will be, that area will be full of aluminum sulfate, and we'll make sure. If you want to turn it to pink, you want to use lime, a little bit of lime, but you want to do it very, very slowly with lime. So
you're running the risk of killing the plant.
Yes, you have a little more risk on that one. But aluminum sulfate is a great way to turn them. If you like that real blue, rich blue color aluminum sulfate on it.
Can you turn it back?
Yeah, lime. Lime. Just turn it back with lime.
You can, so if I have a white
one. You can flip
one.
It back and forth. White, this white is permanently white. The only ones, the pink and the blues, are the ones you can change colors.
Oh, well.
That's a unique characteristic in plants. Very unique.
Change the chemical mix every year and change the color.
Yeah, that's a very unique characteristic.
If I do both chemicals, will it come out variegated?
Yes.
Really?
If you do one side of the plant with lime and do one side with aluminum sulfate, it will be, you'll have two different color flowers.
Huh.
Because, you know, the root system of a plant is kind of like a cardiovascular system. One system, one part of the root system is responsible for the branch on the left to the right, or you know, so it's that.
They're assigned a particular root to a particular branch.
Right.
I never
You can have two different color flowers on one plant, you know, so if you like, give it a shot, go ahead, you know.
No, I was just curious.
You know, in your garden, why wouldn't you have hydrangeas? You know, you should. They'll take care of themselves. They'll, you know, produce flowers. You got plenty of leaf mold and easy to grow. I mean, it's moist out there.
I do not tend any plants.
Well, just put it in the ground. Put it in the ground, you know.
No.
You know, put it in the ground. But those are some of the shrubs that are blooming right now. Hydrangeas are beginning to bloom. Azaleas are on the way out to bloom. Encore azaleas blooming. And then if you wanted to use azaleas more frequently in your landscape to produce color, then you want to look at another group called satsuki.
Satsuki.
That means in Japanese fifth month. So they're not blooming until May, okay? And then they rebloom again in the fall. And they're a more compact azalea. But so you can have azaleas, and then you could use some of our natives bloom. Let me see the scientific name of that one. It's a white one that blooms in the fall. Only blooms in the fall. They come to me in a second. But so you can have azaleas if you like azaleas blooming in flower pretty much all year round.
I have azaleas. I just don't tend them.
They do well.
Oh, yeah.
They're beautiful.
By doing nothing, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's 6:50 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Brief break. Jumping right on the phones to your calls at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show, 6:55 here at News 104.5. And our phone number is 855-765-1045. Man, have we got the fives going on.
555.
555. That's not the sign of the devil. It's nothing other than we're at News 104.5. That's a beautiful thing.
Yes.
Looking for Larry during the week for your landscaping project, hardscapes, pergolas, fountains, and all that sort of cool stuff, what go on the outside of your home. He is easy to find online, larrysgarden.com. Lots of folks blogging there, lots of photos of previous projects, befores, afters, videos, great place to interact. Or you can call him directly at 346-1970 outside of the immediate Jacksonville area. Happy to serve you there too, Larry is. 904-346-1970. 700 people will purchase homes this weekend in North Florida. The fortunate few will have a home pro inspection. And how they will get that done is going to the website gohomepro.com or using the telephone number 268-8211 down toward Palm Coast, Gainesville, or out in the peripheral of the WOKV listening area. You will need the area code 904-268-8211. You know, I think what I need to do is, you know, we do a reasonable amount of business down in the hinterlands, you might say, Palm Coast, out toward Gainesville.
Get yourself a pocket helicopter.
Nah, get a local phone number. I think I'll do that, and we'll get another one for South Georgia.
Yeah.
Makes people feel good.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The service is the same. It all works out great, but somehow,
no additional cost?
To the person?
No, okay.
No, as a business owner, I mean,
okay.
I absorb that cost. That's not a big deal.
No problem.
People, you know, back in the day, service trucks, I used to see it like with Snyderman back in the day. They had like 50 phone numbers. You know, if you're in Mandarin, call this 268 number. In the South Side, call this 346 number. They had all these different phone numbers. It was really a way of doing things back in the Yellow Page day.
The Yellow Page day.
Yeah, it pretty much all went into the same place. But
remember the Yellow Pages?
Yeah. I do.
We had to flip through the Yellow Pages, figure out what you're going to do.
Now we have Google.
Pretty much gone. You know?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I can tell you, I haven't
like newspapers.
They're on their way out, too, regrettably.
Yeah.
I haven't spent money in the Yellow Pages in more than a decade.
Yeah.
Used to spend quite a bit of money.
Yeah.
In the early, you know.
Sure.
Mid-90s. And
things have changed.
Makes no sense.
Yeah.
The newspaper's really struggling, too, regrettably.
I think the only newspaper that's making money is the Wall Street Journal.
There may be others. USA Today, I think, is still doing well.
Yeah, they are.
But local papers are struggling. It's kind of a spiral. As your revenue goes down,
smaller and smaller in size too.
Well, the revenue goes down.
I used to read the Los Angeles Times read it every day. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was a book. You know, pretty much. You know, read to that thing.
Well, you know, you can read the newspaper while you're listening to the Home and Garden Show on WOKV.
Yeah,
you can read the newspaper while they're on Facebook, watching us on the video stream. Oh, that is a reminder.
Yes.
That we have been streaming now for going on a month. We stream video live of the Home and Garden Show. You can see it on Facebook at the Home Pro Inspection site or Wally Conway. We're working to get it in more locations. So people all over the country interacting with us. We're thrilled about that. It's 6:59 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. We've got Fox News traffic, weather, and more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back.
Helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend. Discussing things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Now, the Home and Garden Show with Wally Conway and Larry O'Neill on News 104.5 WOKV.
7:06 on a beautiful Saturday in Jacksonville, Florida. A special welcome to all the guests in town for March Madness. Happy that you're with us. For those of you just joining the Home and Garden Show, the Home and Garden Show is heard every single Saturday right here on News 104.5 WOKV from 6 until 8 a.m. Home and Garden Show features Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden and me, Wally Conway, from Home Pro Inspections. And what we do is share our thoughts and ideas and observations not only from the past week, but from the 20-plus years we individually have, one in the garden, the other in the home. And then the fun part for us, what we enjoy most, is taking your calls. That phone number, 855-765-1045. We'd invite you also, while you're on the radio, that's a beautiful thing. We're also live streaming the show on Facebook at Home Pro Inspections, as well as Wally Conway, and the WOKV app, and on and on and on and on. So most any way that you are connected, we are connected with you. And that same phone number will work no matter what you're doing, 855-765-1045. And if you happen to be streaming or watching the stream on Facebook, you can interact directly there, including uploading of pictures or videos for us to comment and help you on. So that's really a fun thing for us. We're happy about that. Asbestos.
Oh, yeah.
Asbestos is on my mind. I had a great conversation with Wayne Terry the other day from Puroclean. And it's interesting, when you have a problem in your home that requires a rapid remediation, you know, you had a flood, you had a fire, even dead bodies for that matter.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And in the cleanup process, it's important that the people doing the cleanup understand the materials around them, in particular asbestos. So asbestos is very, very common in homes, not as common in new construction as it was through the 60s, 70s, and even through the early 90s. But the items in your home that may contain asbestos, things like ceiling tiles, very common. Things like floor tile, very common,
yeah,
especially
floor
the
tiles,
square
that,
ones.
Those,
and other
linoleum.
That's right, which would be a brand name. And so some linoleum over the years in the past also had asbestos. Insulation around pipes. Solid board asbestos, even some plasters contained asbestos. And I'll tell you, a material that often contained asbestos through the 90s that people don't think of, and that's popcorn ceilings. Could be contain asbestos.
Yeah.
So it's critical if you're doing a renovation that you're aware of what materials you're ripping out so that you can take the appropriate precautions so that you're safe. Very easy thing to do. We just take a sample, goes in a little nice bag. Off it goes to the laboratory, and you get back a yay or nay. Yes, this is an asbestos material. No, it's not. It's very quick. The turnaround's usually 24 to 48 hours at the very most.
What about those little home test kits? Are they pretty effective?
I don't know of any of those for asbestos.
Yeah.
There are home test kits for lead.
Yeah.
There are home test kits for mold. The lead test for home kits is very reasonable. It's called a reactive test. Mm. Has a little ampule. You break it, and it mixes two liquids together. you rub this little piece of cotton, it looks like almost, like a Q-tip right. sort of thing. You rub that on the suspected paint, and it, depending what color, it's a yay or nay for lead.
Right.
The problem with those tests is you don't know what's in the second, third, fourth, eighth layer of paint.
Right.
It can only detect the surface. So, and the mold tests are a total waste of time and money, in my observation, opinion, and study. What happens on a do-it-yourself mold test, you open a little Petri dish
right.
that's exposed to the air, the spores fall on it, and stuff grows. And you send it off to the lab, and they tell you what's growing. The problem is there's no reference position.
Right.
You can't determine, is this normal? Is it abnormal? It doesn't mean anything. So they tend to cause hype and hysteria and no practical outcome. And I don't know of a home test for asbestos.
It's a
microscopic
thing.
Yeah.
You know, these
if you
tests.
Had a microscope and you knew what you were doing, you could do it yourself, I suppose.
Because the fibers and stuff.
In a real estate transaction, you can't do any do-it-yourself tests
right.
because it needs to be third party and chain of custody and all that sort of thing. So it's a simple thing. It's $150 to know, and you want to check that out. Let's check in with – I got something wrong with my mouse here.
Feed him.
Here we go. Checking in with Reg in Bostwick to see if we can help with his citrus trees. Welcome, okay. Reg.
Hey, how are you this morning?
Good. Now that I found the right mouse, I have three mice here in the control room, and I had the wrong one. I apologize to you.
I know. I have the same problem. The night crew comes in and moves stuff, and I can't find it when I come in the morning.
Right. So what's up with the citrus?
I have an orange tree that's about a year old, about 4 feet tall. And it's just covered with buds. Mm-hmm. I've heard some people say you should take them off the first year. Others don't mention it or say, what is the official reading on that?
Yeah, well, citrus is a plant that has a unique characteristic. It produces probably 80% more flowers than it's going to use. You know, so you only get around 20 to 30% of the fruit of the flower.
Why do they do that? Enhance pollination in some way?
It's only God knows.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's just one of those botanical characteristics, or you know, that's distinct to citrus.
Interesting.
But I would let them go ahead and produce what they're going to produce, because there's no way telling how, you know, which ones are going to be productive, and until they start forming those little buttons. And then, but most
right.
often, because a tree's so young, it will drop some of the fruit. You know. If it does, in fact, start working on the fruit and they start coming to maturation, they're maturing and growing, then you want to reduce the amount, okay, if you'd like to have some fruit. You know, you can remove them all.
Right.
That energy spent on fruit production is quite a bit, so that would be diverted more into the tree. So it's up to you, but you definitely do not want the tree to become overloaded, because branches break and it's harmful, all right?
Yeah, there's so many on there, it sure would if they all produced.
Oh, yeah,
all
yeah.
Right,
it
would just, yeah, I appreciate that. I've been told by some people they take them off, all of them off the first year, but not so.
Not so. You know, you want to have a couple pieces of fruit reward for your effort, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
As long as it can support the weight, it's fine.
Yeah. All right, I appreciate it. Thank you. Y'all do keep up the good job.
Thanks, Reg.
Enjoy listening to you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye.
I've just seen bamboo everywhere, and it's a great plant. And you know, there's all kinds of bamboo, Bambusa demicalis. There's that do well in our area that produce a nice screen. But one of the bamboos you don't want to plant is a multiplex.
Why not?
Because, I mean, it's a bamboo. It's tough. It's cold hardy.
Is it a creeper or a clumper?
It grows more vase shape.
Vase shape?
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
That it's, well, you know, like Bambusa taxilis grows very upright.
Yes.
So when you're trying to move around that bamboo, it's laying out into forming that V shape growth pattern. So as a hedge, it's not the best one to plant, because it's going to be hard to get underneath it, to maintain it,
gotcha.
To mow around it, to do all the things. If for a specimen plant, you know, if you like that vase shape, it's a good plant for that. But it's not really good for planting as a hedge. So, you know, making sure if you're planting bamboo as a hedge that you select the right type. The bamboozas are good. Most of them are good. Demercalis, most of them are good. So select the right type. Spend some time looking at it. Or, you know, call us and we can give you some ideas on
that. Talk about the difference between creepers and clumpers.
Oh, you don't want to plant any runners, you know, because they, even the black bamboo, which
why would I not? So in a scenario like I have, so I'm on an acre.
Yeah.
I have no lawn.
Yeah.
It's very natural. It feels like if I ran a runner like along the fence line, along the border, it would just.
Well, you know,
spread like wildfire. Why is that?
There's a Napa. There's a bamboo garden in Gainesville. In bamboo, if you have enough room, I'll take that back. If you have enough room and the bamboo is a fairly slow runner, like black bamboo, it's a beautiful bamboo, very spectacular, but it's a slow runner, so it could be easily controlled. But a bamboo forest is a really unique thing to walk through. It's because there's runners everywhere and they're coming up.
See, I would like that in my house.
Very, very Asian looking, very just a cool feeling when you're walking through there.
Privacy, it suppresses noise.
Right, and it makes its own mulch. But runners along perimeters and in small gardens or in landscapes are dangerous. The way to control a runner, if you have a runner, is in the fall. You know, when they're growing vigorously, you'll notice new culms coming up, which are the stems. Is to kick them. They're very, very, very soft, and they'll just kick them over, and they'll kind of that clump or that rhizome will die.
Excellent.
So very easy to control.
Let's head over to the south side, check in with Andy, and help with the crepe myrtles. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show, Andy.
Hey, good morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
I got this crepe myrtle, and 2 years ago, it bloomed like crazy. It was a gorgeous sight.
Uh-huh.
Last year, I just had green leaves and sparse at that. And I checked the base of the crepe myrtle, and it had carpenter ants. So I sprayed for them, got rid of them. This year, the leaves are coming back in force, so I think that helped. But what else should I do to get the thing to produce the beautiful flowers?
Well, you know, I would go to Home Depot or Lowe's and get some Mill Organite. I have Natchez crepe myrtles. And if I want them to produce, I'm talking about where they'll be leaning over in the street. They're getting so much flowers on them that just I use fish emulsion and rose fertilizer and Mill Organite, and I put maybe about 5 applications of that on there. And it will seriously. It's going to be leaning over, and it's going to have so many flowers. It's going to be amazing how much flowers will be produced. They're really responsive to good fertilizing. They do a great job on that.
That's great to hear. Thank you so much.
All right. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye, Andy. I went to ask Andy whether he was a crepe murderer or he let them just grow.
Yeah. Well, crepe murder, you know, the coppicing of plants is a very English, or they do that all the time. Like there's willows in their landscapes or in their borders. The English border is a famous thing, you know, what style of gardening, and that's perennials, some shrubbery, you know. But they love to take willows and coppice them back. That means cutting them to the ground so they get that nice green foliage. They use take small trees. They'll cut them to the ground. Every year they'll spring out with new branches. They'll have that nice compact shrub. Well, you can do that with crepe myrtles. Now, I think that the best application, even I was listening to some of the hybridizers who developed these new dwarf crepe myrtles and dark-colored leaf crepe myrtles, that they recommend, you know, planting the crepe myrtle as a border shrub. It's a deciduous border shrub. And the advantage is there's hardly any plant that produces as much flowers as a crepe myrtle. Crepe myrtles are really super productive. And as far as flowering units on them. And the new ones have great foliage. They have that burgundy foliage. They have the chocolate color foliage. They have the black foliage. So, in fact, we're doing a landscape where we're planting crepe myrtles as the border plant in front of the window.
I like that.
And you cut them down. They grow up about 3 to 4 feet, and they're covered with flowers every single summer. You know, just really a dense amount of color and flowers. And then when the winter will come, they'll have some fall color, especially the dark color crepe myrtle leaves usually have great fall color. And then when you're ready to start them in the fall, around February, cut them all the way down, 4 or 5 application of crepe myrtle, rose fertilizer and fish emulsion, some miller organite you can get from Home Depot or Lowe's, you can have a great job of that. And then flowers. And if you don't like the sticks, you can put Walter's viburnum in front. You know, Walter's viburnum is another easy to grow shrub, great flowers. It's probably, to my understanding, I don't know why, people will plant ligustrums, the landscape package, those ligustrums, viburnum otissimus. For just a few more dollars, you can get Walter's viburnum, which is Miss Schiller's or White Christmas or Densa. They're great boxwood-like foliage and beautiful amount of spring flowers and adapt well to pruning. They're flexible like ligustrum. How does a plant get popular?
That's a crazy question.
Yeah, how does it get popular? Well, all of a sudden...
Sago palm is the classic example.
Well, sago's got popular because they're exotic. That's one of the reasons. But most plants, shrubbery, gets popular because it's flexible. You know, it can take shade, it can take abuse, it can play wrong planting, the wrong amount of irrigation. You know, ligustrums are flexible. Viburnum otissimus, flexible. So that they become popular. The downside is they're usually aggressive growers, and they can cause little problems on the maintenance.
I'll be watching out for maintenance. Okay. I don't do yard maintenance unless I can eat the fruit.
Eat it.
7:21 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Brief break. Jumping right back on the phones to your calls at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. 7:27, beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville, Florida. I am Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections. And along my side here, as you can see on the live stream, is Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden. I want to give a shout out and a big thank you to all of you for being such loyal and wonderful supporters of the show, as well as being loyal and wonderful supporters of Larry's Garden and also Home Pro Inspections. And the folks who have been joining us this past month on the live stream on Facebook and other venues, it has been great, great, great fun. What we're able to do now in the live stream, you can look right into the studio in HD, as it turns out.
HD, hallelujah.
And you can get a peek at us and the interaction going on in the show. But what's even more fun than looking at us is interacting in the stream. So we're able to receive questions directly through the Facebook stream. If you've got something on your mind in your house or in your garden that's a little bit challenging for you to describe, you can put the picture right in the Facebook stream, video, anything that you like. So it's been a real boon to grow beyond WOKV.com, grow beyond the WOKV app. And now that they're supporting us in this live stream all across the free world, maybe it's even in Russia and China. I don't know. They have Facebook in China?
Hey, American style gardening is really very popular in Japan and China and Asia. Yeah.
Well, I don't doubt that they have gardens and houses there. I was curious if they have Facebook Live.
I don't know. Probably.
Need to do a little business trip to China.
Well, they have a little censorship there. So I mean.
Well, yeah, and God knows the Chinese don't want them learning about houses and gardens.
Oh, no.
They might have a coup or some other thing would happen. Yeah. Anyway, we're grateful that you're with us. Love to have you join us. That number is 855-765-1045. It's 729 here. It's time for Fox News Traffic, Weather, then more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you. And again, that number, this should be locked in your phone and speed dial.
Yes, absolutely.
855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. 7:37 here on a beautiful Saturday morning. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections, along with Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden. Enjoying the day together, taking your calls at 855-765-1045. 5, water, water everywhere and not a drop to drink. That's a very famous nautical one-liner from, where did that come from?
Yeah.
Moby Dick, maybe? One of those.
Yeah.
One of those great nautical tales.
It sounds like a guy wanted to drink of water and couldn't drink it. Yeah.
Sometimes the water in your own home doesn't feel like water you'd really choose to drink. It could be the smell. It could be the taste. It could be the texture of the water, and you want it all the way right. How you get your water all the way right, and I got this from my good friends at Affordable Water, Mark Kinder and his crew, is through water treatment, which takes on many different modes. It could be filtration. It could be reverse osmosis. It could be softening. There are a multitude of ways to treat water depending on the water that you're starting with and the water that you desire to have. So how do you make that choice? For me, in my mind, it's a little bit like the home inspection universe, and that is credentialing, certification, and licensing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are a multitude of ways or places or people that can show up and sell you a water softener.
Yep.
There are woefully few who are licensed to do that. And there's a lot of nonsense that goes on in that business, to be very careful, to be very truthful.
It's good diagnosis on what's going on in your water and what you need to do, what you're attempting to do.
So how do you know? How do you sort? And again, certification, credentialing, experience, and license. There is a very specific license issued by the state for these water quality experts. And at Affordable Water, it's license number W32.
Yes.
If you've got license number 32.
That means you were the first man there almost.
Darn close to it. I would imagine license holders.
You were in
the
sleeping bag, but you came at a normal hour.
Right. License holders 1 through 31 have likely passed on. And what's interesting with Mark Kinder at Affordable Water holding license number 32, the passed on is will be passed on to his son, who's also very active and very knowledgeable in the business, as well as holding the same licenses and credentials. So when you're making that decision that you want to have better water, Affordable Water is the place. That's where I go for all information. It's interesting. You know, in the home inspection business, we've been in more than 35,000 houses around town. And people routinely have water softeners, you know, at the home that we're inspecting. They're very commonly in horrid states of disrepair and maintenance. Affordable Water is one of the very few companies anywhere who not only stocks parts, but has the technicians to repair what's damaged, even if they didn't initially purchase it. They can, so they can get it all serviced up, get it all full of the salt.
Service is a big thing.
It's a very, very big thing. And then those who are desiring a new system, they have the capability to do that. I have yet to get complaint number one back into my office from a person that we referred to Affordable Water Jacks.
That's it just make you want to take more baths. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Drink more
AffordableWaterJacks.com. I know them, like them, trust them. It's a good thing. Let's check in with Lynn and see if we can give her some suggestions on landscaping her driveway. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show, Lynn.
Thank you. I have recently bought a house, has great landscaping out front, but we have a 300-foot driveway that has an 8-foot wood fence on the left and woods on the right. And I'm wondering if I should even landscape it because they form a canopy with the neighbor's yard, which is really pretty. But we are constantly trying to get rid of those Florida vines along the driveway that just look unsightly with all the woods there.
Yeah, yeah, okay. That's always an issue. You know, landscape, so you got woods on one side and woods on, you got a canopy covering the driveway. That there's hardly anything that beats that, you know what I mean?
I like that. I have that at my house and my street.
There's all kinds of paintings done of those canopies covering
the. So what's the best way to get those
creepy
vines out
those,
of there?
You're talking about the ones that have little thorns on them?
They just, if you look to the right, I mean, it's kind of scrubby woods because it has really old vines that have been there for a while, just choking the trees. Basically.
Yeah, the best thing is to do, if you can get Roundup and drill into those vines, get a little small drill into the actual vine. If it's a big vine, it's maybe 1 inch in diameter, you could drill a small drill bit in there and then fill those vines up with Roundup. Put multiple holes, fill them up with Roundup, and try to reclaim that area. Okay, so you don't want to make it into, a weekly or a quarterly mowing down. You want to try to get it finished off. So the ones with thorns on them that have a heart-shaped leaf, they have a tuber underground. If you fall the vine back to the ground, it's going to have a tuber. Then if you could push away the dirt and drill a bunch of holes in there, maybe four or five, and fill those up with Roundup, you're going to be good in good shape. If you have muscadine vine that's been growing there for decades, again, drill some small holes, fill it up with Roundup. But take one section at a time and try to clean that one section out at a time. You know, it's going to be a pretty, long time, but once you get it done, it's going to be finished completely. And then good mowing. Because if you're planting something there and you've already got problems with vines, it's going to just amplify your troubles, and then your planting is going to be a waste of time. So try to get it cleaned up.
Hey, Lynn, I got to ask you a question. It sounds like you're at sea in a sailing ship. Where are you?
It's a terrible ride right now. There's a lot of wind going over the Dames Point.
Ah, oh, wow. You got the top down?
No, just a bad connection.
Okay. All right. Well, I was hoping you were at sea. Like our girlfriend Margie checked in with us last week from 13 miles offshore, and you sound like you're on a sailing ship. But you have a beautiful day, ma'am.
Yeah, Margie.
You too. Thanks for your help.
Bye, Lynn. Hey, let me ask you, would that same method of destroying that vine work for creeping fig?
You can use herbicide on creeping fig. Yeah,
work
absolutely.
Same way. Yeah. I had a question on a Facebook stream about being rid of a creeping fig.
And yeah.
It sounded like that same
round
technique
up,
would
go
work.
To the base of the vine, and then drill into it and put the stem in there. Some fellow said that he tried it and it didn't work, but I've never not used it and not worked. You know what I mean? So
I do.
So repetitive action, making sure it's the right concentration is always important.
And over to the west side, checking in with Noel to see if we can help with the pittosporum. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show, Noel.
Hey, good morning, fellas.
Mm-hmm. Hi.
Yeah, I've got right in front of my house at the focal point. I planted them about 20 years ago, and there's six of them, and they've all made one big hedge together.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked great forever until last year I noticed it was starting to thin out.
Right.
So I went to my local lawn and garden shop and got the right chemicals because the leaves were starting, instead of being green, they were getting yellowish.
Mm-hmm.
So I cut them back about a foot, fertilized them good, treated them with the chemicals. And last year they went from about 50% up to about what I consider 75% healthy and full.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here this spring, now I'm debating what to do because I'm in the exact same situation. Some more of the branches have died,
okay.
And I've got that yellow fungus or whatever it was that I battled last year.
Right. Well,
so
there is some problems with pittosporum. They do have this bacterial and fungal disease that gets on. So I would look for a telltale sign, and going down the stems or the branches, look for any swollen or a gall or any distorted tissue that's on the branch. If you have that, dig them up and throw them away, and then plant a different type of plant there, because you can spend a lot of effort trying to recover them and resuscitate them, and there's not going to be much good result. You're going to keep running into the same problem. And if they struggle, get rid of them. So I would look to see if they have that issue. I'm 90% sure. Thinning down, branches dying back, look for a gall, a distorted piece along the branch or stem that looks kind of corky and swollen. All right? If you have that, dig them up, throw them away.
I think I have that. And a matter of fact, I found a new way to make a 60-year-old guy jump straight up in the air and scream like a little girl.
Stick your hand in a wasp nest.
even worse. I mean, I'm okay with a wasp nest, but that swollen gall thing you were talking about.
Yes.
Last year, I went to start breaking off the dead branches, and when I broke off a branch in my hand, it started buzzing and wiggling in my hand.
Oh, okay.
That there was some kind of boring bee that it got inside of one of those galls, and that happened to be the one that I snapped off.
Oh, well, it was a bee.
Some kind of wood-boring bee, yes.
A wasp. There's probably a wasp.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know wasps made nests inside of branches.
Yeah, yes.
Ouch.
That's what the problem is. I doubt it. Now, wasps do cause galls, but I don't think that that's an issue. It's a normal thing is that those pittosporums, some areas get this disease, and they just start, the branches start dying on them all the time, and then they just take them out and put new ones in. That's your best bet. Try Walter's Viburnum. They're a great plant, beautiful spring flower we were talking about today, and dude, that's a great plant.
That just happened to be what I planted on the other side of the house last year, and they look great. They made it through our mild winter good, but yeah, I've got 8 new viburnums on the other side of my house.
Right, great. They have a great spring color. Or you can try crepe myrtles, spring color with flowers. You can take crepe myrtles, dwarf crepe myrtles, coppice them every year, and they'll have some color for you.
All right, last question. If I decide to give these guys one more try, cutting them way back, if I did that,
that's a good question. I think the whole, all the tissue is infected. But, I mean, I'm not 100% sure on that. Cutting them back to 4 inches above the ground and removing all the gall and cleaning all the mulch up and, spraying the ground with some bleach, maybe a little bit drenching the ground with bleach, you may get lucky. Okay? But remember, your pruners have that disease on them. So when you're pruning other plants, be aware of that.
Wow.
That's maybe what your problem is. You may have removed all the gall last year by cutting them back. And when you re-pruned your pittosporum after they recovered, you may have reinfected them.
So it stays dormant on the blades of my shears.
Yes.
Wow, that reminds me of trying to fight fire blight on my red tips. That's the reason I yanked them out before.
Okay? Yeah. If you have fire blight and you prune your red tips and you prune your other healthy ones, they're going to be done. They'll be
all right. So
dirty surgical instruments.
It's been right, exactly. It's just like human beings. You know what I mean? It transfers, it lays dormant. Yeah.
All right. One last silly question. What should I spray something on my shears, like a light bleach water?
Alcohol, bleach, anything like that.
That's a great tip. That is awesome.
Especially, for people who are pruning their palm trees, they got these $20,000 Canary Island dates. They got one that's sick and or got some type of fungal disease, and then you prune the next one. Guess what? That other one's going to get the same problem. So, you got to be careful with trees. That's why you need to be careful when you're hiring arborists. You got to make sure that they're cleaning their equipment before they come to your trees.
That is super advice.
All right. Have a great day. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. 7:51 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Got one more break. Back for the final segment of the Home and Garden Show. Whose sweet voice will we hear? The dial's 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. 7:56 here at News 104.5. Grateful that you have been with us. Got just a couple of minutes left in the show. Heading up to Amelia Island, checking in with Linda, who has a thought or concern about a whole house dehumidifier. Welcome, Linda.
Well, I'm welcome. Thank you for taking my call. And I'm actually calling from my husband who went to work.
Okay.
I should be able to record this so that I could, play it back to him. But I'll try and write all the notes down.
It's
at
WOKV.com. It'll be up Monday morning.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. We're just recently been considering getting a whole house dehumidifier.
Why?
And well, actually, we heard your show, I'm not sure, quite a while ago about how you set your temperature. You don't set your temperature, you set your humidity.
Correct.
On your thermostat. And we've never been able to get ours down below 50. So we just started to get interested in the temperature versus the humidity and how that would play in the house.
You might call your heating and air contractor, and depending on what heat pump you have, if it has a variable speed air handler, they can just change out your controller instead, so that rather than only be able to set your temperature, you can also set humidity.
On what? On our existing unit?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
And 50 is not bad. I set mine at 45. It's a little more comfort at 45. Before you spent money on a whole house dehumidifier, I would invite out your favorite air conditioning contractor. Snyder is who takes care of our stuff. And see if they can't optimize, they're called dip switches, if they can't optimize the speed of your fan and controller for greater dehumidification, and if your system has the capability to take that dual control thermostat so that you can control temperature as well as humidity. That would save you a ton of money.
Oh, that sounds interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing, when you set the temperature in your house during the winter time, during the summertime,
yep, you will be comfortable if you lower the humidity, you will be comfortable at a higher temperature, so you'll have increased comfort and decreased expense to do so.
Okay, and I'm assuming that works the opposite when it's winter time.
It has no impact on the winter time because you're adding heat. And you're not doing any dehumidification using the system.
Well, during these last few weeks, we were considering that we would probably run the dehumidifier more because, yesterday it was like
a third. Winter's a lot more, less humid, too. We don't
Linda,
get much
we
rainfall.
Have got to go. I apologize. You can check in at the office at 268-8211.